anything is possible in this country. I found Ohio to really be the land of opportunity. Not that I ever came here, but other than on vacation to see my cousins and my uncle who lived in Newark, Ohio. But I always thought Ohio was just a different world. Back in Pennsylvania, it was steel mills, coal mines, smokestacks, steel workers, coal miners coming home at night. I mean, that's what I envisioned. And in Ohio, I saw an opportunity where anything was possible. And that's why on February 7th, 1983, I moved to Ohio with the goal of starting my first business. That first business was a consulting firm. It blossomed into owning and operating nursing homes, a CPA firm, a construction company. I had a physician's management practice. I had numerous other businesses, a arena football team, an amphitheater, you name it. I was involved in a lot of things during my entrepreneur years. People would say, yeah, but I heard you also did a lot in Wadsworth. I did. I was a firefighter. People forget that. I served on the fire department for a number of years because I always believed in giving back. I was on a board of zoning appeals and a planning commission. Remember, those are volunteer positions. You don't get paid for those. And then at one point in time, the business community saw a city that was having a little bit of trouble and struggling. It was a what they called a you know, a sister of Akron, because everybody was working in Akron but living in Wadsworth. And Wadsworth's budget was starting to have some issues. And the business community came to me and asked me if I'd get involved in politics. I had no interest in politics then, and voiced that issue that I had no interest in politics. But I always believed in giving back. And after a number of phone calls and a number of requests for me to try and get involved, I did step up with the idea that I was going to work, and I was going to get involved in this, in the city. I was going to make a difference, and I was going to leave. Now, some people might call, you know, there are those the skeptics, because you're going to hear me talk about career politicians. There are some people who say, well, you were a politician back then. No, I was giving back community service. You can't live on $1,500 a year. There's a big difference between giving back and getting a small stipend. I mean, I was a baseball coach too, by the way, in Wadsworth, and we got no stipend there, but I did that for 16 years. So some people would say, well, you're a career baseball coach. No, that was giving back to my community as well. So these are the things that I believe are my parents taught me. Give back. When you're climbing a ladder, always look back and always pull people up. And I always believed in giving back my community service. During that period of time, I told you I had a number of businesses, including three Harley-Davidson dealerships, a Chevy dealership. I had a Chevy dealership in Wadsworth. How I got that Chevy dealership was kind of interesting, because what happened was General Motors actually contacted me. So I really have the, you know, people say, everybody thinks they have the story, but the true story is General Motors contacted me and asked me to take over a troubled dealership. I did. I accepted that. I turned it around. I had 53 employees. Life was going good. Then I met with General Motors in about 2008, and we had agreed that I was going to build a brand new location out on the highway. I got an option on some land out on the highway. That was going to be that business that I passed on to my children and grandchildren, because I did believe I wanted to leave. I wanted to be able to give something back, not only to the community, but have something for my children and grandchildren. 2009 comes around. We're moving forward. Life is good. The Chevy dealership's doing fine. And then all of a sudden, as many people remember, the federal government took over General Motors. General Motors filed bankruptcy. And when they filed bankruptcy, there was a division in the White House called the Car Czar, and there were six people who made decisions who stayed and who left. At that time, General Motors even told me, you have nothing to worry about. You are doing fine. Until I got that letter in June of 2009 that said, you are no longer going to be part of the General Motors family. I got to tell you, for anybody in this room, when the federal government steps in and takes something from you, that's a very difficult situation. And what I did is I called my congressman. I was upset. 53 employees were going to lose their job, and I was fighting to save that dealership. I learned very quickly that in July of 2009, my congressman, who said he would help me, didn't. In fact, he voted not to reinstate my dealership and other dealerships, and that's what gave me the energy and the thought that I'm going to run for Congress. Again, anybody in this room that ever has the federal government take something away from you, it's a situation that you should never be comfortable with. And that's when I felt our government had interfered too much with me, but also those 53 employees. And remember, there are some in the room that may say, well, General Motors is better off for it. I still worry about the 160 dealerships in Ohio and the 6,000 employees that lost their job because those dealerships were taken. That's who I worry about. And that's why I ran for Congress and found out very quickly, Congress is a very broken place, especially my first national race, almost $15 million spent. Somebody asked me at the table, what's it like to be attacked? Well, it's not easy. I mean, attacks are interesting in that you can say anything about anybody, you can lie about anybody, but in the end, it doesn't have to be true. So things were said about me in 2010 and 2012, and by the way, they're being said about me now in 2018, that were already attack ads in 10, 12, and now 18, which are false and misleading, but that's politics. Many of you know that in 2017, I decided that I was going to leave Washington. It's very difficult to be in the House with 435 people, especially somebody who likes to get things done. I'm somebody who likes to accomplish things, get things done, have goals. That doesn't happen in Washington. Too often, career politicians are more worried about their next election and not worry about the people they represent. So things don't get done. And I decided to come back home. And many of you know, in March of 2017, I made an announcement that I was going to run for governor because I believe this state has been so good to me. And I've been so blessed by this state. And I truly do love this state for what it's given me the opportunity. A poor kid from Western Pennsylvania with about $200 in his bank account comes out here, starts his first business, and lives the American dream. That's something we should all be proud of. And that was Ohio in 1983. I'm not sure that's the same Ohio today. And that's why I decided to run. In January of 2018, many of you know, Josh Mandel stepped down and quite frankly, I got the call to get into this race by multiple people, including the President of the United States, and that's the reason I stepped into this race. So now, I've been in this race for about 7 months. Some people forget that. You know, Sherrod Brown, my opponent's been in it for 6 years. I've been in it for 7 months. He's raised almost $23 million. He's the number one individual in lobbyist dollars in the Senate, in the United States Senate. He has raised more money from lobbyists. And I've only been in it for 7 months, and we've been able to run a pretty good campaign of getting people to know me. I've traveled the entire state. Here's the difference that I've learned. And again, I can tell you, I learn a lot in every experience I have, whether it's a car dealership, the motorcycle dealership, all those experiences, I've learned so much. Here's what I learned in 7 months. People really don't know Sherrod Brown. They know the name. Because when I travel the state, they haven't seen him for years. And that's one problem. Number two, people don't get to know both individuals, and that's why I'm glad you're all here, and I'll give you an opportunity to ask questions. But in the end, you got to get to know both candidates. You got to get to know the differences. Here's the difference for me. I truly want Ohio to be first. I truly believe that the biggest problem we have with career politicians is they only worry about the next election, not the next generation. And I truly believe that the difference between myself, who wants Ohio first, and Sherrod Brown, my opponent, who really loves Washington and Chuck Schumer more than he loves Ohio, is reflective of his voting record. So Ohio is a purple state. We all know that. It's not a deep blue and it's not a deep red. It's a purple state. But Sherrod Brown votes 97% of the time with his party, 96% of the time with Chuck Schumer, and 94% of the time with Elizabeth Warren. He's the fourth most liberal senator in the entire Senate. Now let's think about that. Is Ohio the fourth most liberal state in the entire Senate? The answer is no. Here's another little tidbit you should all know about the differences, and I think that's important. I have a record of almost 18%. I'm rated as one of the 18% most bipartisan members of Congress. I have gotten bills passed with both sides. I have a bipartisan breakfast that's been going on for 8 years and will continue to go on even when I'm in the Senate. On the other hand, Sherrod Brown is one of the least bipartisan members of Congress. So we're a bipartisan state. We should be looking at that. We should be talking about those things. We should be looking at records. We should be looking at how much Sherrod Brown loves Washington and Chuck Schumer more than he truly does love Ohio. The other thing I think we should look at is career politicians. Look, I have run a campaign against career politicians, and here's what I believe. Career politicians only worry about the next election. Think about this. If Sherrod Brown wins, he will be in politics for 50 years. 50 years. Now, I guarantee you, I don't care whether you're a liberal, I don't care whether you're a conservative, I don't care whether you're a moderate. Nobody believes politicians should be in any position for 50 years. He was elected when he was a senior in college. He was elected as a senior in college, and he has been in Washington, if he wins this election, for 50 years. That is something that I know most people do not like, whether it's a Republican or a Democrat or a moderate or an independent. Most people don't believe people should be in politics that long. So what I ask you to do is take a look at both of our candidacies, look at what we represent, and remember this. In 1997, there was a politician came out and said, the biggest problem in Washington is people go there. They spend 20 to 30 years, and people in Ohio are tired of that. They're tired of it, and they believe that, and back then it was a term limit vote, they believe that we should have term limits because they become so indebted to their leadership that they don't represent Ohio anymore. That person was Sherrod Brown. He said that in 1997. Today, he's going to be there between 20 and 30 years. Think about that. And if he wins, he'll be there 31 years. He has now violated something he believed in 1997. The other thing Sherrod Brown will tell you that, and again, these are the differences I'm trying to make a point of. Sherrod Brown will tell you that he worries about the coal miners and he worries about the steel. Well, where have they, have they done better in the last 25 years? Think about it. My grandfather was a coal miner. You know, when Sherrod Brown wears the canary on his lapel and he says that's for coal miners, my grandfather died as a coal miner. I understand coal miners. And when he talks about steel workers, my uncles were steel workers. I saw them every day and their struggles. I understand what it is to be in a steelworker family or a coal miner family or a union family. My dad was a union treasurer of the railroad. I told you when I started in this conversation that when I grew up, there wasn't a Republican with 100 miles, 150 miles of where I grew up. The problem is, you would ask, so how did I ever become a Republican? It's not because I left the Republican Party. It's because the Democratic Party left me. And I think most people would understand that and believe that. So I'm asking for you to take a look at both candidates. I'm asking you to get to know both candidates. I'm asking you to realize that you have two different people. You have a career politician who loves Washington more and Chuck Schumer more than he really loves Ohio. And look at his voting record. That's the test. Look at his voting record. The fourth most liberal senator in Washington. The other thing I would tell you is that if you like the direction our country is going now, after the last 16 months, which I think most people do, whether you're conservative, liberal, moderate, you have to like 4.2% growth, unemployment at its lowest level, wages going up, you have to, stock market going up. I got to tell you, there's not a pension plan out there that you can't be unhappy with because the pension plans are growing. If you like that, then you should support somebody who has agreed to push the president's agenda forward. Now, there are some people in this audience today that I would say they probably don't like what the president says, doesn't like what he tweets, doesn't like what he has said. I'm not one of those people that agrees with what he said or what he tweets, or I'm not even going to agree 100% of what he does. But here's what I do agree. I do agree with the policies, and that's the key. So if you want to go backwards to the days, the lost 10 years, and everybody knows, including myself, there was a lost 10 years in this country. And the policies of the last 10 years, that's Sherrod Brown. That's what he has supported. If you want to go forward with somebody who tries to support this president when I believe it's good for Ohio and actually goes against this president when it's not good for Ohio, I would ask for your vote on November 6th. And with that, I would open it up for any questions you may have.
Thank you. Paul... I'll prime the pump here. Question on the economic vibrancy of the state. There are questions about just how well Ohio has done in the recovery from the Great Recession. According to census data released a few weeks ago, of the 39 counties for which data is available, 41% actually saw a decline in median household income last year. What needs to be done to address this?
Sure. So I've said all along in Ohio, we need to make Ohio first. And by the way, perfect example. If you support some, Sherrod Brown's been around for 25 years. This just didn't happen in the last 2 months or 3 months. This has been a decline over 25 years in the House and Senate, and a decline when he was in the State House as well. He's been in Washington for, he's been in Washington State House for 44 years. So what we need to do is we need to continue to grow our economy. We need to make sure there's a couple things. Here's what I would tell you first. Number one, I believe our education system needs to be changed so that, and people, I'm glad to hear both governor candidates have finally listened to me. Because when I first jumped in the governor's race, I said, the biggest issue we have is education. And I said, the problem is we've pushed all of our kids and said the only way they can be successful, the only way they can be successful is they have a college education. And I know there's some people here at the University of Akron, and that's great. There are some people that it's good for four-year educations. But let me tell you about those that it aren't. When Daryl, you know, from Southern Ohio called me and told me, my guidance counselor told me that if I don't go to college, I will be a useless person, shame on us. When the superintendent of a school up here in Northeast Ohio said that the only way our kids will be successful is that they go to college, shame on them. What we really need to do, we have a lot of jobs, and we have a lot of things growing now in Ohio. This tax cut and jobs bill, 40 companies have introduced expansions, introduced increases in wages, introduced an opportunity to grow. What we need to do is we need to find that path so that we can match up skill sets with jobs. And today the problem is the only thing we're matching up today is dollars going to high schools to make sure people become college ready. Not everybody is ready for college. I will tell you this, here's some daunting statistics. We're the seventh most left state in the country, and we're the number one state for college debt. What's that tell you? That tells you we're not driving the train in the right direction to get our kids to stay here and to keep our college debt down, because we have kids that are going to college. Best example I can give you is my daughter-in-law. My son got married a year ago. My daughter-in-law had college debt and never finished college. And the reason was everyone, that stigma is you got to go to college. We got to break that. So let's match the jobs up with the education, which means you can be a welder, a plumber, you can get a college degree. But in the end, let's make sure we're matching things up so we grow Ohio and people don't leave.
And a reminder, if you haven't submitted a question yet, I do have a handful of them. There's still time to write your question, so write it down and then raise your hand and somebody will come around and collect them and bring them up. From the audience, reports have shown Medicaid expansions has helped 150,000 Ohioans seek the addiction treatment they need, but you want to end it. Why?
Medicaid expansion is not working. That's one statistic you can hear, but let's talk about the people in the middle who don't have the money. Les, we have taken care of those less fortunate, and we should. Those in Medicaid, those the elderly, the indigent, they do need taken care of, and we do need to protect those. But how about Molly, who talked to me, who has three daughters, who can't afford the premiums and can't afford the deductible? How about her? How about she who's working every day and can't make ends meet? Here's the problem with the Affordable Care Act. It's not affordable to those in the middle. It's affordable to the wealthy, and it's affordable to the poorest of poor because we're taking care of those. But I'd like to know how many people are talking to those in the middle who are struggling every day, who can barely make ends meet. My sister, she can barely afford the premiums. She has a small subsidy, but she tells me it's worthless because she can't afford the $6,000 deductible. We need to change Medicaid. We need to change the Affordable Care Act. So number one, we protect those that need it, but we also make sure that premiums start coming down and are affordable, because that's the issue. And by the way, when it comes to Medicaid expansion, let me just say this. I'm on the Budget Committee. that number is unsustainable. So it'd be nice for a governor to say, I'm going to take it as long as it's sustainable. But when I look around at some of the youth here, we're just putting you in major, major jeopardy because there's not enough money. The federal budget is one of the biggest numbers in the federal budget is Medicare and Medicaid. We better start looking at it. And by the way, there are those here that say, well, just raise taxes. You could raise taxes 100% and you're not going to cover the deficit. You are not going to cover the deficit. These are some of the numbers we need to start thinking about and talking about. But we need to have programs that are working for the indigent, the elderly, but also the people in the middle. So another little story I'll give you, and I love these stories. I was driving back from an event, and I had a driver bringing me back, a car service, and a driver looked back at me and said, Congressman Renacci, he said, I am barely making ends meet. He said, my wife and I make less than $50,000 a year. I can't afford health insurance, and yet you guys penalize me. You penalize me, and I can't afford health insurance. What country penalizes you when you can't afford health insurance? Keep in mind, 185,000 people in Ohio got penalized last year by the federal government, and 85% of them make less than $50,000. That's the statistic. Those are the statistics we should be talking about. That's why I do think we do need healthcare that works, that's affordable, that covers the most needy, but is affordable for those in the middle as well.
A question about the USMCA, the replacement for NAFTA. What's your opinion about the new trade agreement? What changes would you make, if any, to support our building and construction trades?
Well, look, the agreement's new. We are still getting through it. We're still going through it, so it's hard for me to talk about all the issues. But I do think this president has at least worked to put an agreement forward that not only works in the best interests of our country, the United States, but also does not hurt our allies in Mexico and in Canada. So it's very difficult for me to dig into the specifics because we're just looking through them. I have a staff that's reading through them. We're getting a lot of that information. But what I see is a bill that has about 85% of a lot of good things that are positive. I think it moves our country forward. I think it helps those that are manufacturing and that are employing people, and also those individuals that are employed here. And when it comes to the trades, look, I'm a big believer. I grew up in a family of trades. I grew up in a union background. And I would always tell you, the problems that exist with the unions, first off, we have the lowest, almost in decades, we have the lowest amount of union participation. Well, Chair Brown's been around for 25 years. What's he done for you? I mean, let's start thinking about that when we make decisions. I have met with the labor unions and said, I love labor, I believe in labor, I'm a family of labor, but at the same time, let's make sure it's working, not only for you, but for Ohioans, so we can grow the economy and move it forward.
Today is Judge Brett Kavanaugh's first day on the nation's highest court. Questions, a couple of questions here about the confirmation hearings. If you were on the Senate Judiciary Committee, what, if anything, would you have done differently as part of that process?
Well, first off, look, it's a disgrace what we've seen in that process. And by the way, that's not just me saying that. I hear that from Democrats. I hear that from Republicans. I hear that from independents. We took a good man, and we basically went after him for unsubstantiated allegations from 30 or 40 years ago. Now look, if we're going to set that standard of conduct, we better set it on everybody. And I know people say to me, oh, I know what's coming, but it's the truth. If the Democratic Party is going to set a standard of conduct that says all you have to be is alleged, and then you shouldn't serve in Washington, you shouldn't serve on the Supreme Court, the Democratic Party better look back at themselves. We got Keith Ellison, who has issues. We got Sherrod Brown, who has issues. And Sherrod Brown's are affidavit issues. They are affidavits. They are court records. They're not allegations. So if you're going to set that standard of conduct, shame on them for doing that, unless they're going to be willing to look back at the people behind them that are with them. So what I would have done, look, first off, I would have met with Judge Kavanaugh. I would have talked to him about where his plans are and what his thoughts are. But then I would have looked at his background and experience. Let's face it. Here's a guy who has a successful record. He has actually moved here cases to the Supreme Court that have been approved by the Supreme Court. He's got the most record of moving. So if you're gonna bring somebody to the Supreme Court, wouldn't you want somebody who has a record? He has a positive record. He's a strong jurist, and he's going to follow the Constitution. We shouldn't be picking judges just because, well, we want a liberal one, we want a conservative one, we want a moderate one. No, the president had an opportunity, and I heard Geraldo Rivera say this yesterday. He said, look, the president of the United States won. He is able to appoint who he believes, just like when Barack Obama won, he appointed who he believed. And what we need to start doing is moving these forward and not embarrassing our country and our hearing process by doing what we did over the last month.
So there's been reporting this week about a new UN report that carries a life or death warning indicating that 2030 is the tipping point for completing changes to prevent overheating of the planet. Are you still of the opinion that Trump policies in the U.S. are on the right track now to save the Earth from the forecasted devastation?
Well, I got to tell you, if you listen to the Comptroller General, you'll also hear that we have a devastating situation coming forward, and that's our debt and deficits. So if we are going to look at the direction our country's going, number one, we better look at the history and the evaluation of what our debts and deficits. The Comptroller General came before the Budget Committee and said, if we do nothing, he's a Democrat appointed by Barack Obama in 2010. If we do nothing in this country, our debts and deficits will take us in a Greece-like situation within the next 20 years. So we need to look at that. We need to look at everything. But I think in the end, we need to have a safe environment. We need to have a clean environment. We need to do what's best in the interests of our country. But at the same time, we do need to make sure we have a clean environment, a safe environment. And if we're going to look at that statistic, let's look at our debts and deficits statistic. Let's look at a number of statistics that are looming in front of us. And let's quit electing the same people who have put us in that position. If we're going to change our country, quit putting the same people in elected office who have taken us down this path.
Question about the local economy. What could be done to prevent the closings of the power plants at First Energy? There are 2,300 jobs in Ohio that are at stake there.
Well, absolutely, and I've toured the power plants. The difference between me and my opponent, Sherrod Brown, is I've been to the power plants. I've talked to the employees. Look, there is a financial issue there. It is a state issue. It's not a federal issue. But I do think the federal government can take some action in the sense of regulatory issues. I know that I've talked with the White House on these issues. Here's the difference between Jim Renacci and Sherrod Brown. We had an issue up in the Toledo ports where we were not able to get international barges coming in to that port. All right, and a lot of people have tried to change that issue. And what I did was I went up there. Here's what's sad. I went up there and I had a meeting set up with the mayor, the unions, and the company that brings these international barges in. The night before that meeting, Sherrod Brown got a hold of those people and said, don't show up to that meeting. That's okay. I still went to the meeting. I met with the people that were there. And guess what we did? I worked with the White House. And that rule changed within 7 days so that now we have international port, we have international ships being able to come in because they had to change a basic regulatory issue that had to change. So the reason I bring that up is if we're going to work to get things done, would you rather have somebody who's working with the president or fighting the president when it comes to our local economy? That was millions and millions and millions. By the way, whoever asked the question about labor, there's a perfect example. Those are labor union jobs that were being stalled because equipment couldn't come in for two major productions and construction issues up in Northwest Ohio. So I think the answer is we got to be able to work with this administration. Who better than somebody who has a voice to the administration versus somebody who's fighting the administration and all these issues?
You talked about how devastating it was for the federal government to take something from you. This person wants to know what your position is on the government taking people's property for pipeline construction.
Well, look, I've said all along that the only way that the government should be able to take anything through eminent domain. And by the way, we have to have the ability for eminent domain in cases that affect the best interests of the public moving forward. If it doesn't do that, then it shouldn't be taken. But if there is the evidence that says it does, and by the way, and if there's fair market value being paid, I think those are the two keys that are important. I don't think the government should just be able to take anything without a fair case. By the way, go back to my situation. The government took my dealership and offered me peanuts to get out. I mean, that was unbelievable what happened. But what was worse for that is the 53 employees that lost their job. That's a whole different situation. At least in eminent domain, you can take it to court, you can get a fair price, you can get all those things. Government was pretty shrewd in the bankruptcy. They put it in a bankruptcy so we had no leverage to be able to sue and work through the process. And they're the ones that drove that situation, much different than when you're talking about eminent domain.
Question on redistricting. What are your thoughts and your position on redistricting to reform the situation? So let's take the case of Akron. We would just have one congressional representative.
Yeah, so I've said all along, it's kind of funny. Think about my first race. My first race, I run against a guy who's embedded in the Democratic Party, and I get $15 million spent, and I win, only to turn around and get redistricted into a district that was worse than I was in before. And I ended up coming up into the Cleveland area and Cuyahoga County area. I was split. I agree with you. There are issues in redistricting. I've said all along, and you go back, I would love for us to come up with a mechanism where we have a computer program that sets the standards and sets the districts, keeping counties intact, keeping cities intact, because it's ridiculous that if you go to, for instance, Medina, city of Medina, half of it's in one district, half of it's in another district. City of Akron, four different members of Congress. Now, some people say that's powerful because you have four people who can represent the interests of Akron. The problem is, and I always chuckle when I say this, there are three problems in Washington. Nothing starts on time. Nobody knows our debts and deficits. And number three, politics gets in the way of everything. So even though we have four members of Congress in Akron, politics split that. And it's very difficult to all come together. I've tried. I mean, when Russ Price was still alive, he had an issue that was very important to him. And I took that through my bipartisan group, and that we worked very hard and are still working very hard to get done. I could not get all the members to go along with me. But those are the kind of issues I think are important. But that's what I've done. The difference is, do you want one person representing you or four? I'm sure there's some people in the room would love it if there were four, because you get four voices. I do think, though, from the standpoint of representation, I'd love to have a computer program. Now, here's what when I bring that up, here's what people say. It's political, because somebody writing the program will be political. Look, everything in life is political. But what we have to do is have a fair system that's overseen and a computer system that generates it. Then I think we would have less of this gerrymandering. And by the way, I was one of those districts that was in a fight all the time. What I did, go back and look at my district. I ran against Betty Sutton, all right? That was a four-point race. That was an ugly race. It was a four-point race. But what I did with that district afterwards is I reached across the aisle. I have Democratic mayors who supported me afterwards. And I took that district last cycle to where I got 64% of the vote. And if you go around there, you'll see not every Democratic mayor supported me, but I can count at least four Democratic mayors that were very supportive of me as I ran for re-election last time. That's what we have to do to get things done. We've got to be able to work together.
So you support the compromise that state lawmakers came up with this year to change how districts are drawn?
Well, it's interesting. I did not get involved too much in that because I knew I was leaving the House. I support any compromise that is, number one, effectuated by the people that have the votes, because that's representative government, and at the same time, I support anything that allows us to have fair districts as well.
What do you think are the most pressing issues facing Stark County?
Well, look, I've said this all along. The problem in Ohio, and I'm getting a real good taste of Ohio again. Remember, I had business throughout Ohio, so I've traveled throughout Ohio. I've been in places before in the business world that now I'm seeing from this political world. Proctorville, Ohio. I guarantee you, Sherrod Brown has not been to Proctorville, Ohio, 551 people strong. But I've gone as far south as Proctorville, as far north as Bryan. They haven't seen Sherrod Brown. I've been all over this state, including Stark County. Here's the problems. We've been forgotten in some areas of this state. Columbus is the mecca of growth in this state, and other cities have had to struggle to get some attention. That's the problem. I said all along, the best thing we can do for me is I want to represent the entire state. I think Stark County needs to be looked at. It's jobs in the economy. Let's face it. No matter who you poll, it's jobs in the economy. It always starts with jobs in the economy. And we need to make sure that those jobs in the economy are spread and what we can do for the state are not just done in Columbus, but are done in Akron, Canton, Stark County, across the board. I'm a big believer that we need to make sure that every city is thought about when you're the senator for the state of Ohio, not just your political base city. So I think Stark County gets back to jobs and economy. How do we effectuate change? The tax cut and jobs bill is part of it, but we got to continue to reduce regulatory climate and make sure businesses want to stay here, come here, and grow here. And the one thing we're missing today is we're missing the workforce. So everybody in this room knows our workforce is a problem. We need to beef up our workforce when it comes to all those trades, whether it's welding, carpentry, all those things. And then we'll have a state, including Stark County, that can benefit from some of this.
A question about the campaign itself. National Republican groups have largely avoided spending money on the Ohio Senate race. Is this because they don't think you can defeat Senator Brown?
Well, again, I don't put my, I don't think national people were really banking on Donald Trump winning the presidency either. There was a tremendous amount of money spent on all the other candidates. In fact, if you just looked at money and spending, you would think Donald Trump would not have had a chance. Here's the truth of it is, we have a number of seats in this state. This is the first year ever, and again, you can check on this, 26 Democrats are up for re-election in this country this year. First time ever, 26 Democrats are up for re-election. Four Republican seats are being challenged. So when they look at Ohio, they look at, if you go back 6 years ago, and you say, well, Josh Mandel, they brought all this money in for Josh Mandel. Problem is there were only seven seats, and I think out of the seven, three or four disqualified themselves because of something they said, and then Josh Mandel moved up into the top. That's fine. I don't worry about that money. I can tell you what our polls say. Our polls say that this is going to be a tight race. Our polls say that Sherrod Brown is not, he's in trouble right now. He may not think he is, but by the way, if he wasn't, why is he spending so much money attacking me? He's got millions of dollars. Why isn't he spending it on telling you what he's done for the last 25 years? You know why? Because if he had to spend money on what he's done, he couldn't find any money to spend, because he hasn't done anything. So what he's done is he spent the last 6 months just spending money on me. By the way, it's kind of interesting because I go into a store. I was just in Perkins in Stark County. Anybody knows where that's at, on Sunday. And I was sitting there waiting for somebody. And I had people come up to me and said, I saw you on TV. You're Jim Renacci. And I'm thinking, yeah, Sherrod Brown, keep running those ads. Because people are starting to figure out who Jim Renacci is. And let's face it, what they do, they're sick and tired of attack ads. So they see the face, they see the name, they don't know whether it's positive or negative. And by the way, everybody in this room has done it. You switch it off, or you go get something to drink, or you hate these commercials. You hate them. So Sherrod Brown, thank you. You have helped my name ID. You're going to continue to help my name ID. In the end, the only thing that's important is what happens in November 6th. In November 6th, you're going to see a very tight race. And hopefully, we're going to remove somebody and give him that gold watch and send him home that hasn't really represented this state at all. He's represented the fourth most liberal Senate. He's the fourth most liberal senator in the country, and that's who he represents. And by the way, everybody knows he loves Washington and Chuck Schumer more than he loves Ohio. That's the real key.
Do you expect an endorsement from Governor Kasich Would you welcome that?
I added the last part.
Look, Governor Kasich's going to do what he believes he needs to do. Governor Kasich has found himself on an island with a lot of people and endorsements. I mean, there are some things that Governor Kasich and I disagree on. One of them is Medicaid expansion. Look, he endorsed Mike DeWine because Mike DeWine endorsed Medicaid expansion. All right? What you're going to get from Jim Renacci is somebody who believes in certain things, and if you vote for me or don't vote for me, that's okay. I'm not going to change my positions to get an endorsement. I believe that our state is a jewel that needs a little more polish after 35 years. And I believe we can continue to reelect somebody who loves Washington and Chuck Schumer more than he loves Ohio, or we can elect me, somebody who wants to polish that gem back up to where I believe it was 35 years ago. So what Governor Kasich does or doesn't do, I do know this. The last time I talked to him, which was about a year ago, and I think that's the last time he's talked to any statewide politician, is the last time I talked to him, he said that he felt I was a very strong candidate, a very good guy, and somebody who could do a lot of positive things. Now, that was when I was in a governor's race, but he still said that. So I still think he believes that in his heart.
I think we have time for several more questions. We'll start to wrap things up. Affordable health care continues to be an issue without any resolution. What is your view on mandatory insurance companies being providing for pre-existing conditions without being penalized with huge premiums?
Yeah, so if you look back at my record, I support pre-existing conditions. I support making sure that pre-existing conditions are maintained. I support making sure that caps on health or insurance are eliminated, and I support keeping your children on until age 26. And if Sherrod Brown tells you any different, that's just an absolute lie. I've signed legislation. I just co-sponsor legislation that supports making sure pre-existing conditions stay. I think we need to do that. I think we can do that and still bring healthcare costs down. But what we have to do, and that's why I supported the healthcare bill that came out of the House, because what it said was, let's make sure we're taking care of the indigent, the elderly, and all of those that need that safety net by block granting money to the states and let them spend it in the best way they can. Then let's look at transparency, and let's put a system in place that brings healthcare costs down. I go back to the driver who told me, Congressman, I can't afford my premiums, and you're penalizing me. You know, the problem is we have a one-size-fits-all healthcare plan that causes costs to go up, and nobody seems to want to put competition back in place. We need competition back in place. We need transparency back in place. You know, the best example I can give you is LASIK eye surgery. When it first came out, it was thousands of dollars, and then there was some transparency, and then there was some advertising. The price came down, and I just saw a billboard, $200 and some for LASIK eye surgery. That's because there's transparency, that's because there's competition, that's because there's an opportunity to get this competition in the marketplace and bring prices down. That's where we need to be.
Question on immigration. Northeast Ohio has a rich immigrant community, which contributes a great deal economically and culturally to the overall region. Now, the Trump administration has taken steps to crack down on illegal immigration and also limit the options for legal immigration. As a senator, would you support the president's ongoing crackdown on immigration? And what would you say to immigrants like those in Akron's Bhutanese community who fled oppression and have found a welcoming community in the city and have made a home here and added to the quality of life for Northeast Ohio?
Sure. Well, first off, one of the biggest differences between Jim Renacci and Sherrod Brown is he supports sanctuary cities. I don't. We should not be supporting sanctuary cities when we're violating federal policy. He does. But let's talk about our immigration program. The difference between Sherrod Brown and Jim Renacci is I've sat with people who've gone through the legal immigration process. You know what they've said to me? Nobody should get here without going through a process. I had to go through a process. Why would Congress allow people to come here illegally? That's something we should be thinking about. So here's the deal. Why would we just drop the rule of law and allow people to come illegally? Come on now, this is a rule of law. I think what we should do is make sure everybody has a path. That's why I voted for two bills that came out of the House. And by the way, let's go back on immigration. It's not the president's fault, this is a Congress's fault. Congress is the one who should be fixing the immigration program. Yet there was a time when the Democrats controlled the presidency, 60 seats in the Senate, and the House, and didn't fix immigration. Shame on them. The problem we have today is we have a divided country where you need 60 votes in the Senate to move anything forward. I supported an immigration process, and you're welcome to look at it, that allows people to have an opportunity, even the DACA individuals, to have an opportunity to have a path. And I believe that's important. But I also support the four pillars that the president says. We do need a wall. And by the way, I don't stand alone when I say that. You've got, you know, Senator Obama, you've got Senator Clinton, and you've got Senator Biden, who all voted in 2005 saying we needed a wall. Now we need to fund the wall. So remember that. And I think in the end, we need the wall. We need to look at our immigration process. We need to make sure that we are bringing people in who can have the ability to help us grow. I've said the biggest problem, I'll tell you, in Ohio, just a good example. If you look at the average family, I think, produces now 1.5 children in a family unit versus 3.5. So we're losing population. And don't hold me to those numbers. There'll be somebody out there say I'm off by one or two or whatever. But the example that I'm giving you shows that we're losing ground. So how do we fix that? We have to have a legal immigration system that works. We have to have an e-verify system that works. But we shouldn't be allowing illegal immigrants to break the system and come here. So I am supportive of a strong immigration system that supports the four pillars this president has, but at the same time, a process to allow people to stay here, come here legally, and be able to become a citizen, just like the woman who sat next to me in the airplane said, please do not let people get here and not have to go through the same process I went through as well.
Two last quick questions. Hopefully there will be quick answers. Do you think, you've talked about career politicians, do you think there should be term limits?
Easy answer, absolutely. I will tell you, it's one of the things I changed on. When I first ran for the House, I told everybody we don't need term limits because there is a term limit. It's called an election. Here's the problem. Here's what I've learned in 7 years. I am a quick learner. Here's what I learned in 7 years. Somebody like Sherrod Brown could spend 22 years or 25 years in Washington, build up a nest egg of $25 million, have the money to throw negative ads my way, and let's face it, I can't compete dollar for dollar with Sherrod Brown, but he throws those negative ads out there, and then you get people say, I can't vote for Renacci because of this negative ad. Here's what we should do. We should term limit people out like Sherrod Brown. You can do that this November 6th. You can give him 26 years, a gold watch, and 44 years in total politics and send him home, because where have we gone over the last 25 or 30 years? That's a real key. But then there's another issue. And it's called money. If we're going to fix our system, here are the two things we need. We need to clean house, term limit everybody out, and then at some point in time, change the money system, because it's not fair. It's not fair that somebody could raise $23 million and somebody get in the race like anybody. We got a lot of young adults here that might want to get into a race. You know what you're up against? You're up against a guy that's going to raise $23 million, and if he doesn't like you, even if you agree with him, he's going to blast you. So here's the key. Let's term limit these people out and move forward. I do agree with that. I've already signed a term limit bill. I've already signed on to term limits. I believe the Senate should be two terms and the House should be no more than three or four terms.
You can hold on to the mic for this one. Last question. Are you a Steelers fan?
Hey, it's a great question. Look, I always tell the story. I was standing in front of about 250 Union firefighters in Canton, Ohio. I'll never forget this. This was in 2010. And they were all standing there. They had their dog pound. They had their dog bones. They had everything. And they were just, now I'm a firefighter. And I was trying to get their endorsement. And I'll never forget, after I did my little speech, the biggest guy stands up. He's got a Cleveland Browns shirt on, a Cleveland Browns hat on. And he said, are you a Browns fan or a Steelers fan? And I said to him, I'm a Steelers fan. And he said, you know what? And I'm going to support you because I knew you were and you didn't lie. Listen, The easiest thing in political world is to lie and not tell the truth. That was the best example. I grew up in Western Pennsylvania. I left there when I was 24 years old. I do happen to have lived through the Steeler days, and anybody that's going to condemn me for supporting the Steelers, shame on them. I support the Browns, I support the Bengals, but I got to tell you, it's tough when you grew up in Pittsburgh, in the coal mining and steel mill town of Pittsburgh, and not support the team you grew up with. Thank you all for being here. I truly appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Congressman Jim Renacci, thank you all for being with us.